Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
From Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, this is What's Next, an hour dedicated to amplifying the voices of marginalized and underrepresented communities across Western New York and Southern Ontario.
We cannot erase, we cannot reform, we cannot make things better if we're uncomfortable having tough conversations,
Absolutely.
If we're uncomfortable Absolutely. Talking about race.
What's Next carries forward our mission to engage in meaningful conversations about race, equity, and the shared concerns that deeply affect Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
Don't stop. Make those families part of your life. Their lives are part of yours. Don't stop.
Together, we dive into the real issues, striving for understanding, connection, and change.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
Welcome to What's Next, as we continue our series talking to mayoral candidates in the 2025 Buffalo mayoral race. We've had several candidates on already. Today, we welcome Acting Mayor Chris Scanlon. Mr. Scanlon, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Jay Moran here along with Ryan Zunner. Ryan, I'll let you start the questioning.
Sure. Yeah. So first of all, Mr. Scanlon, thanks for joining us today. Yeah. Really great to have you on the program. You know, you're somebody who's been in city government since 2012, right? South Buffalo District Yeah. Councilman, getting the council president seat. And then, you know, Byron Brown, you know, resigns and, you know, you assume the duties there as mayor. You know, you've done a lot of efforts to really introduce yourself into the community. I know when you first started, you hit every neighborhood, introduced yourself. How does Chris Scanlon introduce himself to the people of the city of Buffalo in that way?
You know, I go out and have conversations with people. I think that one of the keys to being successful in government is friendships and relationships, partnerships that you build. I think that's how you're most effective at getting things done. So I've tried to spend my time as most of my time as possible, getting out in different areas of the city, just saying hello to people, getting to know them, talk to them, listen to what challenges they're facing so we can address them, but also listening to hear what's going well, so we can build upon those successes and kind of close the gap between some of the negative stuff that might be existing. But just going out and explaining to them, you know, who I am, you know, a lifelong Buffalonian who's chose to remain in the city of Buffalo, despite when I was coming of age and entering my 20s, a lot of people continuing to leave town, chose to live here, stay here. My wife and I are raising our kids in the city of Buffalo. We love the city of Buffalo, and that's what I want. That's why I'm taking on this job and pursuing this job long term, is because I want my kids to have the best version of Buffalo available to them. And for all the other kids and grandkids in the city of Buffalo, I want the best version of the city of Buffalo available to them. I've had a lot of people ask me, you know, the city faces all these challenges. Why would you want to do this? And my answer is because of those challenges. And because of what I just said about leaving the best version of Buffalo for other people. And what we're doing is taking those challenges and using them as opportunities to get better and take Buffalo to the best place that it can.
It was interesting when you were sworn in, your message after being sworn in, very brief, but yet I thought very inclusive. And, you know, you said you want to reach out to every section of the city. Now, you touched on it with Ryan's question as well. So, and you mentioned about strengths. So I'm interested in maybe go around the city a little bit here and see, you know, what you see inside the city. Maybe start with the East Side, because, and again, it's hard to really just make it one monolith because there are different neighborhoods inside it. But what do you see as the strengths of the East Side?
The constituency and their passion for their neighborhood. And the fact that they want to see the best version of their neighborhood. And quite frankly, and you'll hear it from them, and I agree with them, that the East Side Buffalo probably hasn't been invested in the way it should. And we do not ignore that in my administration. In fact, we're embracing it. And we're moving ahead full steam and working with our partners in government, the different levels of government, also community organizations throughout the East Side of Buffalo, members of the clergy. They're extremely important. Obviously, they're the eyes and ears of their congregation, almost multiple council members within the council districts there. You know, they have they have a direct line communication to the citizens, so communicating with them is extremely important. And so we've gotten to work immediately on trying to do some things to make the East Side the best version of itself. You know, the county executive and I are working on a housing program with the land bank. You saw some of it come out publicly where the land bank was going to build these homes with American Rescue Plan funds that the city and county supplied to them. But these homes were engineered and were going to cost $475,000 each to build. And the county executive and I were vehemently against that. And through some re-engineering, reimagining, you know, we've reduced the cost of the construction of those homes by around 30%, which is just going to lead to more homes. The other thing we've done is it was a plan where it was kind of going to be an infill situation where you get one house on the west side, one in the north district, one in south, one in the east side. And we said, absolutely not. There's no impact when you do it that way. We have all driven down streets on the east side where, you know, there might be one or two homes on the whole street. So what we're doing now is we're going to build all of these homes right in the east side of Buffalo and make sure that east side residents have an opportunity to live in them and that they're not displaced. We're also working at the city with some partners locally, but also nationally, on creating a financial empowerment center. What we've got to do is close the wealth gap that exists in the city of Buffalo. So we're doing a lot of things along with our partners on the east side of Buffalo to make sure that the east side is the best version of itself as well.
And just to follow up, because you did mention it, and because you touched upon it, I know a concern for many as different projects are emerging in the east side, you know, around the central terminal and such, there is that concern of gentrification. And you touched upon it out there about things that might be able to be done to make sure that the people there already aren't priced out. What can be done? What is this a zoning issue? Is this how
I think it's
work?
A matter of talking to our friends in the lending institution and the development world to make sure that we're not displacing people and that the people that have lived in these neighborhoods and sustained these neighborhoods for decades are the people that have first crack at these homes. And we're not displacing people and gentrifying neighborhoods or anything like that. And we'll continue to make sure we do that working with our partners on the east side.
And, you know, as the city looks at a tough financial situation, I know, you know, you've had to address it. Other lawmakers have addressed it. Some people have pegged it as high as 40 mil, others lower, others higher. Is that a roadblock in that sort of housing plan? How do you navigate, I guess, you know, public input, public leading of that housing effort in light of that financial situation?
I don't think that has to be a hindrance to the housing plan. You know, I think we got to work with our partners in government at the county and the state level to continue to work on housing. Obviously, I've been very upfront and very honest about the financial situation facing the city of Buffalo. We're talking tens of millions of dollars. You know, people want to know exactly what that number is. It's tough to give an exact number. You know, it's constantly moving. We have departments holding spending, things like that. But you gave out two numbers, and I would tell you it's a lot closer to the larger one than the smaller one. And so we have a lot of work ahead of us on that end. We've talked to our departments about curbing spending this year, and you're starting to see big savings on our expenditure side already in the first few months, and we've got another half of the year to go. But we've got to get creative on the revenue side. We've got a revenue problem in the city of Buffalo. Mm-hmm. Our property taxes are not that much higher than what we bring in property taxes is not that much higher than it was 20 years ago, 15 years ago. So we're lagging behind there. Our state aid payment has not really increased in the last 13 years. So we need to bring revenues in, and we're trying to get creative. I was down in Albany 2 weeks ago talking to a joint commission on the budget and told them, listen, we need help, but I'm not here with a handout looking for a handout. I'm here with my handout looking for partners and looking for the state to give us the tools we need to fix our own situation. Mm-hmm. We're looking for them to authorize a Buffalo Parking Authority. The city of Buffalo currently owns and operates 4 parking ramps, but you know, these ramps are going to soon fall into a situation where we've got to invest a lot of capital. And the continuous maintenance is also a problem with the city of Buffalo. So we're looking to offload these to a parking authority where we would bring a large infusion of cash into the city. It's not going to fix the budget structurally, but can serve as a bridge over the course of the next few years while we fix the budget structurally. We've asked for authorization for an occupancy tax, or also known as a hotel or bed tax, at 3% on rooms in the city of Buffalo, where people who are coming in to Buffalo from outside of the city are going to be assessed that extra tax on their hotel room, who are people are using our resources, using our parks, using our our infrastructure, using our police service or fire services perhaps if they need it. So we should get something out of that as well. So what we're first doing is looking inward and how we can adjust the budget. And then ultimately, if we do need some assistance, we'll ask for it, but we're certainly not going out and asking for assistance or our handout right away. We're looking to fix things internally first.
I believe you pegged the cuts you want to see to each city department, 10%, yeah. Right? Where do you envision those cuts happening? Right? You know, you're also, you know, the mayor, but also, you know, the boss of, you know, several thousand employees for a city government. How do you balance sort of the rank and file employees against, you know, budget constraints and possible cuts on the horizon?
Yeah. So I was clear to our departments. I wanted them to come back with their budget proposals with a 10% reduction. That was the request. That's the exercise I wanted them to go through to see where they would pull from initially. I don't think you'll get to 10% in every department. Some departments, you know, they have fixed costs at 96, 97%. So it's very difficult, but others aren't. We just started 3 days ago sitting down internally with the departments after having them present their internal budgets for their departments. And we're going through those exercises now, but it's a lot of the discretionary spending that they don't have contractual obligations to. And, you know, a 10% reduction equates to somewhere around $20, $25 million, depending on what the ultimate budget is. So if we can curb a lot of that discretionary spending or that extra spending, it would go a long way. Long before we start talking, you know, you mentioned the workforce, you 3,000 employees, long before you start talking about laying anyone off. I know there's been talks about that in the past, and that's the last thing I'm going to do. I would look to curb spending, extra programs we love to put forward and love to have people take part in, but those would go long before I start laying people off.
And just to follow up on the possible house or parking authority, if I'm understanding the way you laid it out, the idea that what the current parking ramps would be sold to this authority would allow that an infusion of cash, but then beyond that, there would be the revenue would only go to the authority, wouldn't be coming to the city anymore.
Yeah, so we do currently draw revenue from that, but in the very near future, the amount of capital that's going to have to go into that, it's really going to be negated, that revenue that we see. But we're also looking and finalizing this to see if there's a way for us to certainly draw some revenue out of it either way.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much for
certainly not just going to forfeit the revenue.
Right.
Yeah.
We're with Chris Scanlon this morning on what's next. Let's talk a little about the police commissioner's position. This was an interesting development. Joseph Grimalia, of course, was under former Mayor Byron Brown. You decided to bring in Alfonso Wright. And one of the things that you brought up is that although you felt that the commissioner Grimalia under his administration, that the police department had been doing a good job of cutting down on violent crime and helping to convict violent crime. I want to use the word nuisance crime. Maybe I'm not using the right word, but more of a focus on different things along those lines. Outline for me how that looks in terms of the police department and how Commissioner Wright is going to implement that.
Yeah. So, what I hope is soon to be Commissioner Wright. I submitted his name last week.
You feel confident that's going to happen?
I do. Based on his reputation, his expertise, his experience in the department, I'm very hopeful that the council will approve his nomination. Acting Commissioner Wright has 36 years on the Buffalo Police Department. He's worked at every level, police officer, lieutenant, captain, deputy, chief, deputy commissioner, now commissioner. He was one of the first community police officers. And it's something that he and I are extremely focused on is the neighborhood component of policing. I want our officers out walking our commercial corridors, walking through our neighborhoods, making sure they're building relationships with our residents, with our business owners, so people feel safe. I think far too often someone's first interaction with a police officer is a negative one. And if you think about it, if someone's calling 911 for a police officer, someone in this situation is probably not having their best day. And so I think it would only help the situation if there's some sort of rapport possibly built with the person who called, the person they're calling on, and can help avoid any of these negative situations maybe we've seen in the past. You know, building this relationship, making people comfortable with the officers instead of having this arm's length situation where they don't want to get to know our officers. And I've seen situations, I know officers who've taken it upon themselves in the past, who go out and walk neighborhoods, walk commercial corridors, and have gotten to know people. And then certain situations have arisen where if not for these relationships that have been established, some things could have gone south very quickly. So Commissioner Wright and I are very like-minded in that approach. We want our officers out engaging with the community. There's talk about crime numbers going down, but you know, whether you want to call it nuisance crimes or quality of life crimes, whatever it is, you know, a stolen car is not a nuisance to someone.
Right.
It's a big deal. And our home invasion or robbery, whatever it might be, these quality of life crimes, they've got to stop. And I think with a better presence in the neighborhoods, on the commercial corridors, I hope that can serve as a deterrent for that, some of that stuff.
And just, was that not a strategy or, I guess, area of concern for Joe Grimalia?
There was a strong focus on the violent crimes. And listen, just because we're focusing on neighborhoods, we are certainly not going to focus on violent crimes as well. I think across the country, you've seen a decline in the violent crime over the course of the past few years post-COVID. So things are trending in the right direction, and we'll continue to do what the 700 men and women of the Buffalo Police Department have been doing for the last few years to address violent crime. But there's also got to be a focus on this quality of life crime where it's impacting people on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. And just to follow up, the head of the Police Benevolent Association was very enthusiastic, if I recall, about the promotion of Alfonso Wright. So should we assume then that the police, rank and file of the police, are going to be excited about the idea of walking a corridor, walking a beat through neighborhoods? Is that what you understand?
Yeah. I've, prior to acting mayor, or currently still, I'm the South District Council member. And I think everyone knows there's a long history of police officers coming from that neighborhood. So I know and I'm familiar with a large number of officers. And they're excited about the idea of getting out, walking. Like I said, some of them I know have taken upon themselves in the past to do it, to try and build relationships. And not only are they excited about that, they're excited about Commissioner Wright coming on. A lot of officers I know have worked for him in the past. Officers I don't know, that I'll just bump into somewhere and say, hey, what do you think of so-and-so? And my 12, 13 years in office have had heard nothing but glowing reports on Commissioner Wright. And so I'm really looking forward to what he's going to do with the department.
Speaking of the police and the police union, their contract expires this, you know, upcoming June. You know, as mayor, you're going to be involved in those negotiations. Their last contract saw new initiatives for like police accountability. They introduced those quarterly reviews. As mayor, do you have any plans for other initiatives to sort of further transparency, accountability, those kinds of things that, you know, might make more people more comfortable with, you know, police interactions?
Yeah. So one of the first things I talked about when I became mayor was accountability, transparency, and communication, not just inside of City Hall, but going out of City Hall with the media and especially with the residents. So Commissioner Wright, I know he has no problem with being open and transparent with the public. He, as I can tell you, he's already been willing to and has attended a number of community meetings on behalf of the department that he and I both have been at. One in particular recently where you saw a string of burglaries along the Elmwood Village. We met with the Elmwood Village Association and are going to continue to meet with other organizations like that. So he is completely open to being out, invested in, and communicating with the community. So if there's any issues, that they can bring it right to the top to Commissioner Wright, and we'll continue to be open and transparent and communicate with people.
One of the tools that the city has, or I guess had before, was that Civilian Police Advisory Board, which hasn't really met a whole lot in recent years. There's been issues with getting members in the community involved in that. Is it a priority then to sort of introduce more, I guess, I wouldn't say necessarily civilian oversight, but more civilian input in the operations of the police department? You know, other cities have implemented, you know, harder advisory boards or oversight boards for civilians with police.
Yeah. You know, I get concerned when you start to go that route. I've always stated that I've had concerns about it. Far too many times you've seen them implemented and fall by the wayside and not be effective. I think what you have now in Commissioner Wright is someone who's committed to transparency, committed to accountability, holding his officers accountable. I think everyone will see that. So I don't think you're going to have to worry about that. We meet on a weekly basis and talk about things going on with the department. And one of the first things he talks about is disciplinary things that are going on within the department. And I can tell you, he is willing and he's not afraid to hold his officers accountable. I don't think we need to be in a situation where we're nitpicking on things with officers, but listen, in every scenario, every walk of life, maybe someone steps out of line a little bit and they need to be held accountable. And Commissioner Wright is not afraid to do that. And that's why he's been nominated to be commissioner.
Another term that has been, you've used quite a bit, is innovation, innovative approaches in the city. We talked about the police and perhaps walking more beats as being a new way of approach to policing. But what about the rest of the city? Give us an example of what you see as an innovation that can be utilized that will make the government more efficient, more responsive to the citizenry.
Yeah. So first and foremost, I think when people hear the word innovation, they think grand scheme things.
Sure.
And that's not always the case, right? It's just a matter of looking at your process first and foremost, you know, and process mapping and making sure that we're being as efficient and effective as possible. You know, breaking down silos that exist within City Hall. I can tell you that a lot of times one person's pointing at the other saying, isn't that your responsibility? No, that's your responsibility. You know, making sure that we have all of our processes mapped out and that things are running as smoothly as possible. And our Chief Innovation Officer, Kirk McLean, has been doing a fantastic job convening people from every department to make sure that we're breaking down any of those roadblocks, any of those silos that exist between departments to make sure that we're as efficient as possible. At the end of the day, we're in the customer service business. And we want to make sure that we're putting on the best face we can forward to the general public. So through those operations, through those meetings, I think you're going to continue to see another a number of things coming from that innovation committee that'll help streamline things with the City of Buffalo.
Was that sort of like a systemic thing that you started seeing, which, you know, department leaders thinking, oh, well, it's your job to do this. I didn't know it was mine. That got brought up with the whole, you know, ARP money, you know, issue where department leaders, it seemed like there was some miscommunications.
Yeah, you know, I think sometimes, you know, human nature kicks in and someone thinks, you know, all right, this is my set of responsibilities and maybe don't step outside of that lane. And then if that happens too often, you end up with people just operating in those silos, and that's just not an efficient or an effective way to run an operation. So, you know, getting everyone together on a regular basis to see where these hangups are, where these roadblocks are, has been very helpful. And I can tell you whether it's through the hiring process, the offboarding process, things during your employment, we're already seeing things change on how smoothly things are operating. So I think the work of this committee is going to continue to bear fruit for the city.
Not to necessarily put you on the spot, but the Brown administration, there's a lot of ways of looking at the Brown administration, not the least of which, of course, is the fact that he was reelected by the citizens of Buffalo several times, of course. At the same time, he departs, and there have been, of course, lots of criticisms of the Brown administration. I'm curious, though, from your perspective, lessons that you've learned, that you're council president toward the end of his administration, you've been on the council for over a decade. What did you see inside the administration that you think we've got to make some changes in the way we go? And obviously, a couple of them have been personnel in terms of commissioners.
Yeah, I think the number one thing, and it's really one of that I've noticed, and I think that my colleagues on the council criticized the previous administration for, and it's something that we are extremely focused on, is communication. You know, whether it's work, your personal life, your marriage, if you're not communicating, you're going to have problems. And I think that we've taken a different approach to communicating and trying to do things on the front end. You know, the budget's coming up. I've been very clear to the council members, the last thing I'm going to do is drop the budget on your desk the day it's due. You're going to be brought in the conversations in the very near future so you know what's going on, what the challenges are ahead, and you're not blindsided by anything. And we're going to continue to operate that way. And again, not just in the building, but outside of the building, talking to people. What I don't want anyone in any corner of the city of Buffalo to think is that City Hall is coming in our neighborhood and they're going to tell us we're doing this or dictating this in our neighborhood. That's not what I want. I want to talk to people so we know what they want in their neighborhoods, the things they need in their neighborhoods, and then we go to work and try and make it happen. I don't want to dictate to anyone. If we're not communicating with the people in the public, we're not going to be successful. And again, it's not just telling them what we're trying to do, but they've got to know what's going on in the building. We have to know what we're doing. So again, being out, talking to members throughout the community, at the block clubs, whatever it might be, I think communication is absolutely key.
We're talking with Chris Scanlon this morning on What's Next here on WBFO. We started off talking about the sections of the city. We talked about the east side. So let's take another stab at a different part of the city. How about the west side? Again, strengths, challenges, what do you see?
Yeah, the diversity of the West Side. And quite frankly, that extends across the entire city of Buffalo. But the diversity in the West Side of Buffalo, the different cultures that exist, you know, the fact that we are such a welcoming city and so many people choose to relocate here. You know, we saw our first population increase and the last census in 70 years. And that's a large part because of people relocating to Buffalo and first time Buffalonians coming here and choosing to live, work and raise families here. So that diversity there is an incredible strength. And then you see pockets of the neighborhood really starting to build up with certain businesses and on the backs of that diversity. And now I think we've been, not I think, but I think it's the responsibility of the city government and government in general now to chip in on the public side. You have that private side, a lot of investment taking place. So we've got to make sure that we're investing in the infrastructure and things like that to make sure that those businesses and those residents can be successful. But the diversity in the West Side is, I think, is its strength.
And that diversity, of course, a lot of it driven in recent years by refugees coming here to the United States and being specifically here in Buffalo. The International Institute, of course, letting us know that, you know, some of the funding that they had expected coming from the federal government would be coming their way to help relocate and resettle a new group of refugees to the city of Buffalo. Now you're a political leader, not just a citizen. Your response to what you're seeing on the national level and, you know, what is obviously becoming an anti-immigrant perspective and attitude that is now finding its way throughout the federal government. What is your perspective on that?
Yeah, it's obviously very concerning. You see what's taking place in Washington and the attack on some of these programs and what it means to municipalities. And more importantly than municipalities, the end user. You know, the end user of these programs that receive this funding are typically our most vulnerable residents, whether it be seniors or new Americans who are still trying to acclimate themselves to life here in Buffalo, coming from whatever country they may have come from. It's very concerning. I had a meeting with an organization, a collection of the resettlement agencies about 10 days ago, and we talked through their concerns, and their concerns are the same as mine, you know, the drying up of these potential resources and them helping people. You know, it's one thing to get people here, but then what I don't think a lot of people understand is the number of programs that are provided by these agencies once people get here and help them acclimate short term until they can get their feet under them and start working and doing things like that. So it's very concerning. I can tell you when the Trump administration announced that first freeze on federal funding, it sent us scrambling internally. What we tried to do is remain calm and show the public, like, listen, we're working the problem. We know that some problem exists, but to that end, I can't thank my colleagues in government enough, council members, Comptroller Barbara Miller-Williams, members of the Buffalo Urban Renewal Agency, who jumped into action that day to try and make sure that we could draw funding down in advance of that deadline at 5 o'clock that day. We were able to pull together a special council meeting, a special meeting of the Buffalo Urban Renewal Agency, working with the controller and her team to draw these funds down. Ultimately, an injunction went into place after we had done this. And then the pause or the freeze was dropped. But one thing we talk about internally, like, this isn't over, obviously. They tried to do it holistically, but now they'll probably come back piecemeal, which is what you're starting to see now. So we have to prepare for this. You know, as a municipality, we're the lowest, as a city, we're on the lowest rung of the ladder. Federal government, state, county, we're at the bottom. So we have to be prepared. And we talked earlier about our budget, things like that. But it's not just our operating budget. It's our block grant budget and things like that. We have to be prepared for maybe these funds not being there and what it might mean to those end users and how we're going to then help those resettlement agencies or whomever else it might be, make sure that their quality of life is not impacted. And the other thing, you know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, targeting refugees and new Americans and things like that, but there's also targeting taking place of longstanding Americans, whether it be the LGBTQ community or other organizations who receive funding, DEI organizations and other municipalities, levels of government, or focused on DEI initiatives. These are longstanding Americans the programs are being targeted as well. So that's something that we have to be prepared for.
We'll take a time out on What's Next. We'll come back with more with us, Chris Scanlon. This is What's Next on WBFO.
Did you know that WNED PBS is always working on great new local shows for you to watch? Documentaries like Kleinhand's Gift to Buffalo, which tells the story of Buffalo's music hall.
The hall is very intimate, and that intimacy makes everyone who comes in here feel a part of our family.
Fun and educational series like Compact Science.
Believe it or not, peppers are technically fruits.
And Shakespeare's greatest hits, featuring some of his best-known soliloquies and monologues.
We are such stuff as dreams are made of.
You can watch them all on our website at wned.org/local shows. While you're there, check out the show pages and mini websites for additional content such as bonus features, photo galleries, and lesson plans. Find it all at wned.org/local shows.
WBFO's Disabilities Beat helps us understand our community's challenges.
I don't think that people understand how exhausting it is to be disabled because you're fighting on so many fronts all the time just to exist.
Sign up for Protect My Public Media to ensure initiatives like this remain strong. Go to protectmypublicmedia.org today and make your voice heard.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
Yes, you're listening to What's Next here on WBFO, your NPR station. I'm Ryan Zunner, joined alongside Jay Moran here in studio, and we have Chris Scanlon, acting mayor of Buffalo, in here for our special series on the Buffalo mayoral election. Chris, thanks so much for your time today.
Yeah, thank you.
We're going to transition now to a thing we haven't really talked about, education. I know that's a hallmark for you. You know, you're a father. You have, kids in the city of Buffalo. You mentioned education in a column that you wrote in the Buffalo News a few months back. I guess as a mayor, especially in Buffalo, right, where the Board of Education, right, it's a separate BPS separate from the city of Buffalo. How do you envision the mayor's office, I guess, being a good partner, being a good pusher for public education in Buffalo?
Well, I think the key word that you use there is partner, right? I think in a lot of cities that have a similar setup as us, the mayor, whoever else is running that situation, likes to shy away from it. You know, it can be pretty toxic at times, the topic of education. We don't want to do that. We're not going to do that. You know, unfortunately, we just saw the superintendent announce her retirement. The superintendent and I were building a fantastic relationship. I think you could see that early on, just a month in, where we passed the largest capital budget in the city's history. $110 million, but 55 of that was for the Buffalo Public Schools to make sure that their buildings are safe for teachers, for kids, things of that nature. They can't borrow on their own. They cannot borrow on their own currently because of the ending of the Joint Schools Construction Board. So the city has to borrow on their behalf right now. We're trying to reactivate that board so they can borrow on their own. But in the meantime, it's an example of us working together. I think that my other partners in government are willing to partner with them as well on the council. The Education Committee, which is chaired by Councilwoman Zanetta Everhart. They have been doing a fantastic job of communicating with the Board of Education, the administration there, the Teachers Federation, whomever it might be, to make sure that we're on the same page. I've just had a meeting last week with the head of the Teachers Federation. We'll continue to meet with the superintendent until she retires, and then whomever the replacement is, to make sure that we're investing in our children. Aside from, to me, it's education and public safety, right? First of all, everyone has to be safe. We can't educate kids if they're not safe. People can't open businesses and flourish if they're not safe, but also we've got to make sure that we're educating our children, on the front end, and then making sure that there's economic opportunity awaiting them once they're done with education. And, you know, I think a lot of people get stuck on this notion of, you know, grade school, high school, college. College isn't for everyone. And I think we have to take a serious look at the vocations. I think we've gotten away from that a little bit. So I think it's a combination of all those things, making sure we're investing in our kids and setting each one on the proper path that they should be on.
I know this is I don't want to make this sound like a conspiracy theory or anything along those lines, but of course, on your 100th day in office is the day that you announced that you were going to be run for mayor. It was presumed by many, of course, that that was going to happen. And on the very same day, the Friends of Chris Scanlon, the campaign committee, announced that you had already raised the committee had already raised $564,000. So again, just talk to me about the mindset of that timeline in that regard, because obviously, you know, I'm sure people were donating to your campaign when you were a South District Councilman, but obviously I would like to think the surge of that money was in anticipation of you running for mayor. So let's just talk about that, the timing of that, of waiting that 100 days. And of course, at the same time, you know, raising a good amount of money that obviously is needed to run for office.
Yeah. So on October 15th, I assumed the role of acting mayor. The last thing I wanted to do was worry about politics on day one. I wanted to make sure that we were governing. You know, it's a tremendous responsibility that you're taking on, making sure that you're trying to improve the lives of 280,000 Buffalonians every day. And it's a tremendous responsibility. It's not something I take lightly. And so my focus was on government. I figure we'll get to the politics when we get to the politics, but my focus was on government. And you know, as we approached that 100th day and we had some victories, I felt like some successes, whether it be, you know, straightening out and finalizing the American Rescue Plan, securing along with the council, the largest capital budget in the city's history, the fact we started to implement some change inside the building that I think is leading to successes already on the outside of the building, and getting out and talking to people in every neighborhood. Every sector, whether it's the private sector, the nonprofit sector, our other our partners in the county and the state level, the different block clubs, making sure we're governing first. And then as time went on, you figured, you know, it's time now to announce that we are going to run for the office. And I was blown away by the level of support that we've received. The fact that we were able to raise that amount of money in that short a period of time has been very humbling. But also very exciting to know that people see what we're doing. They're excited about it. They're excited for the change that we're trying to effectuate. And the thing that means most to me is that you talk about north of $500,000 being raised. 97% of that money has come from people living in the city of Buffalo or Western New York. So this is Buffalonians that live, work, raise their families here, want to see Buffalo succeed, that are excited about our message, the fact that it's a positive message moving forward. It's not a doom and gloom scenario. Buffalo's best days are not behind it. They're directly ahead of us. And I think that working collaboratively, the way I talk about partners and partnerships being built, is going to lead to our successes. You know, the other thing is that more than 60% of that money has come in denominations of less than $250. So these are everyday Buffalonians who are supporting our campaign, who've signed up to support our campaign. More than 250 volunteers already signed up, ready to go. So it's very exciting. It's very humbling. But it has me even more motivated than I was before to make sure that we are doing everything we can on a daily basis to take Buffalo to its proper place and to the next level.
The Democratic primary in Buffalo traditionally has had a low voter turnout for mayoral elections in the past, around 25% in a good year. Is part of your campaign to sort of spark that interest among, I guess, residents, again, among party members to get out and vote and campaign and be involved in that electoral process around here? Because it's a pivotal election, right? 2025, haven't had a new mayor since 2006.
Yeah, you know, I think you're right. It's a very, very important election. First time we're electing a new mayor in 20 years. You see what's gone on at the federal level. So it's we have to be very careful about who we're electing. And yeah, that's certainly part of the goal, is to motivate and activate as many Democratic voters as possible. You know, this is their primary, this is their city, and we want as many people as possible to come out and vote. And we're going to continue to do that. And I think that the way that we've been received, I've been received, and in different areas of the city, really every corner of the city of Buffalo has been very positive. It's been very, as I said, very motivating, very exciting on our end to see that regardless of where we are and what council district or what corner of that council district, people are excited about our message and talking about a clean, safe, innovative Buffalo and a positive message. I think far too often you hear about the negative things or people pointing fingers and speaking negatively about someone or just talking about the doom and gloom scenario. You know, pre-COVID, the city of Buffalo was on a pretty good trajectory. And, you know, there were news outlets across the country, around the world, talking about how well things were going in Buffalo and the great place to live and all the tremendous assets we have, the fantastic people we have here. And so my goal is to get us back on that track where we're headed in the right direction. And I think we can do that with the positive message that we have.
And how's the process been going? I know you've been involved in the Democratic Party committee's endorsement process, right? There was those mayoral forums for committee members. How has that process been from, I guess, a unit of, obviously you have government, you have, you know, political parties, political machines that, you know, are a big player in these things. How's that process been going for, how do you feel about that?
You know, the Democratic committee and the chairman set out a process. Like you said, this is an important election. It's the first time we're going to elect a new mayor in 20 years. So he wanted the members of the party to get to know the candidates. And I think that's right. It's their party. And they have a right to hear from their candidates and hear what they want to do on behalf of them at the city of Buffalo. But the good thing for me is, you know, it's great to go out to the forums and be able to speak and answer questions like that. But the better part to me is the before and after, where you can stand around and talk to committee members, talk to zone chairs and say, all right, well, what are you seeing out there? What's going on in your neighborhood? They want to hear from us, obviously. And that takes part during the official forum, the three forums that we had. But the before and after is even more informative and more important to me, where we're actually having a give and take conversation. And that's one of the things I talked about earlier, how important I think communication is and why we're out in every corner of the city talking to people to hear what's going on.
That is interesting. So the committee members saying what's going on in their neighborhoods, what were you hearing? What did you hear that maybe you didn't know?
Yeah, you know, a lot of different stuff. You know, you hear the typical stuff about city services. You hear about things we talked about earlier, maybe lack of investment in the east side of Buffalo. That's a large one and something that we're very much focused on. And again, it's different across the city of Buffalo. Everyone has different things that impact their life, right? For some people, it might be investment in parks. Some people, it's commercial corridors, lack of businesses. How can you help that? And, you know, we've talked about all this with people and formulating plans, and we'll be out talking to people about it.
And, you know, the federal government's come into our conversation here a few times already. And, of course, like you said, you're going to have to deal with the hand that's dealt you. Whatever comes your way, the city of Buffalo is going to have to deal with it. I'm just curious, though, from somebody now who's in that office, who's sat in that chair and now looks at his city, what should, in an ideal way, what should the federal government be doing for cities like Buffalo and why?
I think it should be listening, right? Municipal government is the level of government closest to the people. And, you know, we hear from people on a daily basis. I can tell you in 12 and a half years as a council member, nearly 13 years in city government now, you hear directly from the people, whether you like it or not, quite frankly, sometimes, you know, in your office, at the grocery store, at the restaurant, at your house, you hear from people. So you know what's going on in neighborhoods. And ultimately, as mayor, you know what's going on in your city better than anyone. So what I think they should, instead of, much like I talked about City Hall going out and talking to neighborhoods and not dictating to them what we're going to try and do in their neighborhoods, it's the federal government should be listening to the cities and say, listen, these are our needs. This is what's actually going on in our city. It's not a one size fits all everywhere. I can promise you that. But this is exactly what's going on in our city. These are the needs we have. These are the programs we think we can implement and direct resources directly to us, because no one knows how to invest those dollars in their city like the municipality. No one has that familiarity with it.
We're talking. Go ahead. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
I was just about to say, you know, we were talking about the East Side earlier in one of the last segments, and you know, obviously you can't talk about the East Side without, you know, speaking about the May 14th shooting at Tops on Jefferson Avenue, which really highlighted for not even just the city, but the country, about that sort of food apartheid, food desert area. As part of your, I guess, plans for the East Side, how you envision the East Side, how do you solve that issue that many East Side residents are facing?
I think we've got to get creative. You know, people talk about supermarkets and things like that. If certain grocers thought they were going to be successful certain places, they'd be there, right? They're interested in their bottom line. And we can try and get them there, and we will continue to try. And if we have to incentivize it, we will. I had a meeting 2 weeks ago with one of the larger property owners in the city of Buffalo and started picking his brain and say, listen, you have properties all across the country. Do you know of any grocers who might be interested? he gave us a lead on a couple names on places that aren't in this region. So they might be interested. So talk to them. But I think we've got to get creative, right? When you talk to the food advocates and people like that, you know, you don't have to stick to the traditional model, right? As the corner store, corner grocery store, large supermarket with the technology that's out there with where you could create food distribution sites, deliveries, things of that nature. I think we've got to try and get a little more creative than just thinking the traditional model of one large supermarket to take care of an area. But it's certainly a problem and it's something we'll continue to address. And I've got great partners on the council who are concerned about it as well. And we continue to work on it together.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of grocery stores on the city's east side, I mean, City of Buffalo owns the Broadway Market, right? So what do you see as the future for the Broadway Market?
I'm very excited about the Broadway Market. You know, the board that is taking shape there are very excited. They're doing a ton of research on some of the most successful markets across the country. Having conversations with them recently, it has me very excited about some of the things they're trying to do and trying to reactivate that market to a full-time market. You know, everyone loves the Broadway Market when they go there at Easter, Christmas, but we've got to make sure we're activating that market year round for that neighborhood. I think it could be a huge benefit to that neighborhood, but what we've also got to do simultaneously is create more dense population around it. Right. So like the program I talked about earlier about housing, things like that, we've got to bring people into the neighborhood to help support the businesses that would go there. So it's kind of a twofold situation.
We're going to take another time out. We'll come back with our final moments. Chris Scanlon with us on What's Next. This is What's Next on WBFO.
We at Buffalo Toronto Public Media take pride in bringing you your favorite national programs like Fresh Air, All Things Considered, and Morning Edition. But what makes WBFO so special are its local programs, learning together about how government works in bite-sized pieces on Compact Civics with host Corey McCants.
Here's a quick guide on polling locations. A polling place is where you cast your ballot during elections. In America, the term polling place refers to the building, while polling station refers to the specific room or area where voting happens.
And diving into pop culture and local happenings on Group Chat with host Bentley and a revolving panel of friends in the know.
I really miss having to actually wait to tune in for a show and be there at the certain time, like having to run home and like turn on the TV at a certain time to like watch your show.
Yeah. Like more national unity than like we're
because
all
you know,
tuned
everybody
in.
Is watching at the same time and you can like call and
ever
say,
since
did you see
streaming
what
it's just gone downhill.
This is Public Media.
Public Media is your gateway to discovery. From investigative journalism on Frontline to live local performances on WNED Classical and tiny stage sessions from WBFO The Bridge, Buffalo Toronto Public Media connects you to the stories, music, and moments that matter most. Explore what we have to offer at WNED.org. This is Public Media.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
And welcome back to What's Next. Jay Moran along with Ryan Zunner. And with us, our guest, Chris Scanlon, as we continue our series looking at the mayoral candidates for the City of Buffalo. Gave you a chance to talk about the east side to the west side. How could we not talk about the south side with the former, well, still representative for the Common Council in the South District, of course. Let's talk about the South District right now. Obviously, it's your home and you love it. But what are the challenges in the South District? There's a lot has changed. I mean, I spent a lot of time in the South District in the early Jimmy Griffin years, so I have a kind of my own memory of it as well. Yeah. But what about for you? What do you see as the challenges moving forward?
Really trying to reactivate our commercial corridors, and we've had some great success along Seneca Street, trying to replicate that. We have a great group of people there that have really taken Seneca Street by the horns. Jake Schneider and his organization was a huge victory when they redeveloped the old Shea Seneca Theater building and reactivated that. You've had some other smaller successes, and you're starting to see that the trickle down from that snowball effect there. We have a and like talked about earlier about the public sector's responsibility then to come in and do some infrastructure work. So there's an infrastructure overhaul that'll take place there starting late this year, early next year. Again, so there, Abbott Road, Seneca Street, trying to address those commercial corridors, but also one of the big things there is activating our parks as much as possible. Mm. We have two huge Olmsted parks. We're the only district with two full-blown Olmsted parks along connected by parkways. So they're extremely active already. Some of the amenities, some of the facilities are a little outdated, need some work. So trying to activate those, but also a lot of the district's much more diverse than it's been, and trying to make sure that anyone that's coming to Buffalo, that's new to Buffalo and resettling, is coming in and getting comfortable and learning South Buffalo in particular, but also the city of Buffalo.
Any advice for a newcomer to the south side of the city of Buffalo? Be guided by, yeah?
No, just that it's a tremendous place to live. It's a community and neighborhood where people really look out for one another. It's very tight-knit community, so I think it's somewhere that they'll love making their home.
You know, we haven't talked about some of the big projects in the city of Buffalo. Probably the most controversial, though, of course, is the Kensington project. A little bit of a stoppage. The courts have stepped in here. Where do you stand on that project?
I'm glad the courts have done what they've done. Everyone's aware of the long-lasting negative impacts that original project had on the city of Buffalo, in particular on the east side. We've talked a lot about the east side quite a bit, so particularly the problems that it's caused for the east side. So I think this full environmental review is not just warranted, but I welcome it. And once we get the results of that, I think we'll be better informed about how to move forward. But I think another great thing about this is, you know, I've spent a lot of time today talking about communication. And I think this pause will give all the people on both sides of this argument maybe time to get into a room together and try and talk this out a little more. It's a very, very passionate subject. I'm aware of that. And if the city of Buffalo and as mayor, I can operate as convener, I'm going to do that. To make sure that people can try and get on the same page. One thing I don't want to see is another situation where a large sum of money, $1 billion plus in this case, is offered to the city of Buffalo and it ends up going elsewhere. We've seen far too many times projects debated here at great length and then money gone elsewhere. You know, Peace Bridge situations, stuff like that. I don't want to see that happen. So I want to make sure that ultimately we get a project there that benefits the city of Buffalo. And I think that by getting together and talking, we can arrive at something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I talk to residents, you know, around those neighborhoods, people that are very vocal about the project, you know, they talk about wanting to restore that Olmsted vision, right? That parkway that creates that interconnectedness between the different neighborhoods. I mean, you talked earlier, you know, you mentioned that Olmsted Park system. Yeah. Do you see some promise in restoring that sort of parkway in that vision?
Yeah, I think the Olmsted Park system is one of the jewels of the city. You know, that system and its interconnectedness is a fantastic thing. And so anything we can do to make sure we are connecting those parks, that'd be fantastic. But I think we've got to make sure that we're doing it in a very informed way. And make sure that people are getting in a room, like I said, and talking this through and making sure that we don't jeopardize these resources just because one side doesn't want to see something. But make sure that at the end of the day, someone's going to be unhappy no matter what the project is. No, I don't know, my 12 or 13 years, I've ever found something where everyone's completely happy with an issue, right? Mm-hmm. There's always going to be people on another side of an issue, but we got to get to a place where there's a large consensus and we don't jeopardize the funding.
And just to follow up on that, is your understanding, and again, you're talking about communication, but I mean, is the basic deal do what the state wants, do what this original project wants, or that money's not going to be there?
I have not heard that from the state. No, that's
that there could be an alternate plan.
That's not been relayed to me. Mm-hmm. But it's certainly a concern of mine because we've seen it happen in the past, right? Where projects are discussed for great length and there's a lot of confrontation about it and animosity builds up and the project's ultimately shelved. And that's just something I don't want to see.
Mm-hmm. And as we do with every candidate that, you know, comes onto the show here, our last 2 minutes, we kind of just, you know, give you the floor to really explain to the audience here as we wrap up this episode, you know, why should people vote for Chris Scanlon for a full 4-year term?
I think because we're pulling people together. You know, one thing that is driving me and my administration, and I say it and people are going to get sick of hearing me say it, but is partnerships and collaboration and bringing everyone together, whether it's the public sector, the private sector, the nonprofit sector, our community organizations, our block clubs, getting everyone on the same page so that we're pulling in the same direction, because that's when we're most successful. We have tremendous talent throughout this city in all those different sectors. And if we get people in the same room talking, we can achieve greatness. But again, I think that coupled with the positive message that we have that, you know, Buffalo was on a tremendous trajectory, and I think we can get back on track and continue to take Buffalo to the next level. You know, I say this to people all the time that due to sheer size, when talking about cities, when people are talking about Buffalo or New York, Chicago, LA, they're not going to reference Buffalo. But when they're talking about cities like Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Milwaukee, Nashville, they should be and they will be. If our administration has anything to say about it, because I think we'll be able to bring people together and take Buffalo to the next level.
Well, thank you very much for spending an hour with us. We know that you're busy.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm Jay Moran along with Ryan Zunner. Our guest has been Chris Scanlon. This has been What's Next on WBFO.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.